Cara.
Hello, everyone. This is the Final Play podcast, where today we're talking about the NRL Grand Final, and probably little bits in between. After the Grand Final, we will talk about what the Kangaroo squad if we get time, but mainly around the NRL Grand Final.
Which was a super game until one certain spot.
It was awesome.
It was.
Until the end.
Welcome, everyone. Jason here still, with Miles and special guest Jeffrey Pringle. Hello, Pringle.
Hello, Jason. Hello, Miles.
Hello, everyone. Be
Hello,
nice.
everyone.
Hello,
Hello to
everyone.
the three people listening to the podcast.
Exactly. Sorry, it might be four after this.
Okay, cool.
No, there's about 92 people, but we can get into
Ah,
that.
oh, yeah.
Almost cracking the triple numbers. That's awesome.
So the grand final was 14-8, won by the Roosters, in front of a crowd of 82,922. So was that actually sold out before, after, sorry, the week leading up, or was that already sold out?
Nah, I think I'd heard during the week that it was officially a sellout, so I must have still had a few tickets. And when they kept sort of showing that drone shot, and up near one of the big screens, you could see one massive big bank of free seats. So, yeah, that's sort of how they want to, yeah, say official unofficial sellout, but yeah, I thought I'd seen a few banks of seats up in that, like right up on that top corner, that looked like that had nobody in them at all, like not even a sprinkling of people, like there was nobody in it. So, if that's how they want to, yeah, it's an official sellout, it's an official sellout. So, gotta buy what they're selling.
Well,
Yeah.
just on that, sorry, it was, yes, an official sellout, but it was the worst or the lowest rated grand final since 2003. So,
I did hear that, yeah, TV ratings were down, but I'm not reading too much about that, because if you read that article a little bit more, apparently the AFL Grand Final had its lowest TV ratings in 26 years. So I'm not reading too much into it. And you've also got to look at the opponents as well. So
Well,
that's how
that's what I
sort of.
was sort of saying. Like, you look at, if we're talking AFL, then you'd probably say that, well, because GWS are playing, and not many, I guess,
Victorian.
casual fans would know who they are. And then
You'd
it's
have
possibly the
casual Sydney
Raiders.
fans.
Right. I mean, it was a big drop. It was, so last year's decider was 3.03 average, 3.03 million average viewers, and this one was 2.6.
Yeah.
So that's a fair
That's the
drop.
AFL. No, that was the
No,
NRL.
that was NRL.
What was the AFL? Did you get that or not?
No, no,
This
no.
year's, I think I've seen something like this year's was 3 million. And then, yeah, so the highest one that they've had was like 3.9,
Yeah.
something like that. But that would obviously be a large grand final, something like Collingwood and Essendon, or two large, two
Geelong.
la yeah, yeah, it's right, yeah, two large Melbourne clubs. So that's, I mean, I don't look too much into that.
Well.
Like, it is what it is. And
I was going to say, before we get into the actual game, because me and a few mates were talking about this, especially even last week, the pre-game entertainment. I mean, if that's going to draw people in, I don't know who would. I don't know. It feels like you need like a classic rock band or a rock band for an NRL crowd.
One Republic was
Like,
a bit odd.
yeah. Yeah, I just, we were saying,
Did
because
you
we were
watch it?
saying,
I
like,
didn't watch it. I watched a
well,
bit of it.
no, well, you
Like,
know, sort of had it on in a play,
fans.
but I don't know. It just doesn't feel rugby league. Like, we were saying, like, kicking around names or band
Wolf.
names, like who, yeah, or we were saying like Foo Fighters. You know, you got to just something that draws, and like, you know, NRL crowds traditionally sort of like, yeah, you know, they're not pop culture people. They're basically after the pub rock stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, normally, but that's, I mean, if they want to try and attract a younger audience, I guess, you'd sort of go with, sort of more of a hip hoppy sort of R&B artist. But yeah, you're right. You're more successful pre-game ones are generally that rock sort of genre. So, well, when we were there in 2017, it was Macklemore or
Macklemore,
whatever
yeah.
whatever the dude's name is. So And that was it. It was the same thing. Like it took an hour for them to set up.
Really?
Yes.
It was crazy, man. Like to sit there and watch them set everything up, because they've got to put all those makeshift things on the field, so everybody that goes out on the field don't ruin it.
Yeah.
It took about an hour to set up.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you're there for the footy, and the pre-game entertainment doesn't really add a lot.
I completely get what you're saying there, but I feel, I don't know, it just feels, it doesn't feel like NRL, like these pop artists. I don't know. I mean, I'll probably
I think what I was trying to say is the pre-game entertainment, like, does it really even matter that they even have it? Like, do they have to have it? Are they just doing it because everyone else does it? They're doing it because they think it actually adds to the enjoyment. Because I just feel sometimes these days they just do it because everyone else has done it and they've always done it. Whereas me, you can get rid of it and people probably wouldn't be worried about missing out.
Wouldn't probably notice, yeah. But I mean, if you're going to pay all the money for the ticket, they probably figure you've got to have some sort of entertainment at the start. So
everybody. That's, I mean, that'd be the only thing you'd sort of get a little bit of value for money for, because if you get there early enough, you get three games of football plus, you know, however long the pregame entertainment wants to go for, 15, 20 minutes however long they sort of want to do it. But for the rigmarole they've sort of got to go through to set it all up there on the field, it looks like it's a mission.
Yeah. So what did you think of the actual, we'll talk about the actual game. What did you think of the game? I mean, we could break it down a lot of stuff, but the overall game, how did you think it was?
The overall, I thought the overall game was extremely entertaining.
Yeah.
Up until that certain point, which we'll get into a little bit later. As the game sort of, the game started oddly with, you know, with the charge down off Soliola's head that went into the trainer,
the Roosters trainer,
the Roosters trainer. Who? Yeah. Why in the blue hell is he out there in the first place? It's 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah, correct.
I really reckon they shouldn't be allowed in the field.
I don't understand.
Really full stop, because they're always out there, and it's becoming more common when the trainers get in the way of play, or they get hit with a ball. Yeah. I've seen that a couple of times this year, trainers get hit with the ball, and it's getting to be ridiculous. Like, they almost need to go soccer style, where people can't go on the field. People have to come off to the edge of the field to see the trainer, because it's getting to be, like, to me, ridiculous. that was one of the key things in the match. Not the key one, but straight away, that caused an issue as soon as it happened. And it could have been easily right to the Raiders.
Well, that's what I'm sort of working on. So just on that, if it goes in, it doesn't matter if it's what side. So it's gone off Soliola's head, and then it's gone into the Roosters trainer. Isn't that a class as a dead ball?
How they classify it straight away,
it goes into a scrum.
It's not the attack. It's not the attacking team. It's wherever whoever territory you're in. So if you're attacking, but you're in your own half, then it's the opposition's feet, which is ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous, because I could see just it being as a dead ball, and then it goes to the goes to the dead ball, and then goes to the next play. The next play, that was a fifth play tackle, so then it goes to Cameron Ball. That's how I've seen it.
Redo the play.
Oh,
yeah.
I just feel like this could have been years ago, but I'm sure if it's a dead ball, it's a dead play, the next play. Like, if it was Roos's fourth tackle, then it'd be Roos's fifth tackle. But I saw it dead play.
You just go back. Yeah, it's right.
The next play. And the next play was that it was Canberra. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the sixth tackle. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's your trainer that's out there.
Yeah.
You know, is that not?
Pringle. Like, it's definitely, they definitely get into the game more. And whether it's tactics that they're the only way to get the tactics out to the players, I don't know. But they are, like, you see them more and more on the field. And not just one, there's more people coming on the field.
The only problem I have with it is it's 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
They don't need water. They don't need a wiping of the brow or anything of that. Why is he out there? It's 2 minutes into the game. Like, both teams have had one set of six.
Yeah.
He simply doesn't need to be out there. He just doesn't.
But if he hadn't been there, that ball would have kept on going backwards, and I think it was Jack White that was busting through the line with no one near him. He could have just picked the ball up and easily just ran and scored underneath.
It's a possibility.
There was no roost anywhere to be seen.
Nope.
Yeah. And he was running like he saw a try waiting there.
And that's why I always thought it was just a dead ball and then you got the next play, because it's touched something like an official. If it hits an official, that's a dead ball. So I don't see how that's different, but you're right. Yeah, I think it was one. Is that what you said? Yeah, he was like clearly running after the ball.
The official's different though, because they're meant to be there.
Yeah, they're meant to be there. That's true.
Trainers are not meant to be anywhere near the play of the ball.
An official can't disappear either.
Yeah.
Official's unfortunate, but you can deal with it. But when it's a trainer, that shouldn't be. That was, to me, that trainer, I would hit them with like a $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 fine just for him being on the field and touching the ball.
Well, at least that early.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, the club.
At least that early. Like that, you're right. Maybe earlier it was just terrible. Yeah.
Grand final that led to a try because he was on the field and then the Roosters got a scrum.
Yeah, they got a free, got a free set of six and they scored off it.
Yeah.
That's a big turning point.
Yeah, that's how the first try was scored. Verrills just slipped through out of dummy half on the fourth, I can't remember if it was the fourth or fifth tackle. And Verrills just slipped out of dummy half and over. And it's in the, that's 7 minutes into the game. And everybody's come out and said the worst thing that could happen is the Raiders go behind early in the game. And that's exactly what happened.
Which they did, and that was a good try from that young dummy half. Is it
Verrills?
Yeah, Verrills. Yeah, he was. He took that on his shoulders. Like, that was the last play. You've got a Kronk, you've got a Keary, and he's decided to run the ball himself. So that was actually, you're right. I mean, except for the other stuff before, like that was actually a really good first try. I thought
it was a sneak. Yeah, it was a sneaky little try.
I thought all three tries throughout the day were really, really good tries and hard-running tries too.
Yeah. So that took it. I mean, and then Raiders did break through. Jack White cut into that goal, and that took it up to sort of, I guess, 8-6, which is where I thought it was pretty fair at halftime. I mean, it didn't look like any team was, standing out. No team. It was very, very, very well defended in the first half. There was no team that was offensively going forward.
No, it looked a little bit more open as the game sort of went on, but you could see that each team set a six. The Roosters were really getting over the advantage line, and they were really putting, getting half-decent attacking kicks in, whereas the Raiders probably in the first 20, 25 minutes were constantly coming off their line, and their sets of six just didn't have as much venom in them as what they did, so they're constantly sort of looking for the bigger kick. And when that happens, and if you're finding Tedesco and you're finding Tupou and you're finding those guys on the full, then you're putting yourselves at a disadvantage straight away. If they can get up and get to the 30, 35 meter, 40 meter line before they even get touched, then you're putting yourself under the pump straight away. Out of that first 20 odd minutes, that's what I'd sort of seen out of it first. Yeah. The Roosters really dominated early.
They had like 8-1
at once.
It was crazy.
And it was just because they got try, restart. So the first 20 minutes was all Roosters. And then I think the second 20 minutes started becoming all Raiders.
It got a little bit more even, but tipped towards the Raiders.
Right before.
A little bit more. And then Papali started playing
really good in the second half of the first half.
Yeah.
Papali was really starting to do well in that bit. The Raiders were just putting pressure on all the Roosters. Roosters started making silly mistakes. And the Raiders started getting on top at the second part of the first half. But the first part of the first half, the Roosters were just...
Oh, yeah.
They had their tails in the air, but the Raiders just held on repeatedly.
Well, that's what these two teams, you know, well, all the top four teams have sort of come out. They've been the top defensive teams in the league all year. So, yeah. You know, it wasn't going to be a 30-22 scoreline. It was always going to be a defensive struggle.
And then after that sort of first half, the second half, right up probably straight after the second half, that on 49 minutes, Cooper Cronk got sin bin for 10 minutes for a professional foul, which I thought was fair.
So you thought that was a sin bin?
Yes, I did.
No.
It was a professional foul. It was a professional foul. He tackled, there's no way, look, he's gone into the tackle, you know, without knowing if he's going to get the ball, but he's tackled the player without the ball, and that is the rule.
But when you look at it in fast motion, it's such a split second decision. I know, you look at it in slow motion, everything looks terrible, but I didn't agree with the 10 minutes in the bin.
But the thing
is, it was definitely a penalty. Yes. But the way they've been putting people on the bin this final series, it didn't surprise me to put in the bin.
And, oh, my God.
You know, they've at least been consistent. And I thought it was definitely a penalty, and the bin didn't stress me that much because they've been putting people in the bin for that sort of stuff all final series.
And so what I'm saying is if he did the rule where if he didn't catch the ball, he had the ball and then Cooper Cronk didn't tackle him, then he was at least a chance to get a try. That's why I thought it was a professional foul. Because
yeah, it's in the vicinity of a scoring opportunity, but it was such a split second hit.
Yep.
That I didn't think it warranted 10 in the bin. That I reckon that came from the bunker, and that's the bunker slowing it down to, you know, putting it in slow mo, and it didn't look terrific in slow mo because he's hit him quite clearly before the ball got there, but. When you look at it in fast motion, though, it's near simultaneous. Yeah. And if the referee is just looking at it as he sees it, then that's a clear penalty. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. You know, it looked like he might have hit him early. You know, and a split second early. But I didn't like the 10 minutes in the bin at all.
Well, that put to Croker ahead. Croker slotted the goal, and that put him up to 8-all.
And they didn't take advantage of that of the 12 men on the field at all.
They actually played pretty shit for the 12. But when it was 13-on-12, they played very average. Like I think the Roosters played better, which is pretty embarrassing when you're one man up.
They did not take advantage. Of the one man overlap at all.
No, you're right. I mean, they didn't. They could have. It's interesting. I mean, in that situation, being that it was pretty much in front to draw, you'd have to take the two. You couldn't go for the try.
I know they had the advantage. That's a given.
We're talking about the next 10 minutes. You would.
Yeah, that's right. The yeah, they took nothing. Yeah, you're
really
right.
Punished them, and the Raiders just didn't. Punish them. The Raiders didn't really look that attacking. The Raiders didn't. It was just like a 10 minutes where the Raiders sort of just floated around and didn't really try and. Yeah, well, they just didn't take advantage of having one man up.
But
and
that's
they were
it.
Very.
That poor. Was their. That was their. That was probably the only thing that you could be a little bit critical of the Raiders as they did. That's the advantage that they needed. That was something that they absolutely had to capitalize on.
And they didn't.
And they didn't. So
that was their, that was one of their chances to win.
Yeah, still being 8-all when Cronk come back on. It's like, okay, that's the only thing you can sort of, if you're trying to bomb their trial line a lot is try and take a little bit of gas out of them and try and tire them out at the end of the game so you can sort of take advantage of it then. And it still, it didn't happen. So I thought that was a bit of a turning point in the game that the Roosters turned them away, and they turned them away time and time again, especially
which
in that second
done all
half.
Year.
Yeah, but even at that second half, the Raiders had a lot of attacking opportunities inside the 20, and the Roosters just they just turned them away.
Yeah, yeah, they've done that all year. I mean, that's why they beat Melbourne. They defensively, they're clinically just.
They just strangle you, and they make you frustrated, and you do things that you don't normally do.
So that
just
got
like that. Yeah. We're just patiently building building pressure, continually going there.
Yeah.
And they were just waiting for that little half break or that little chance to happen.
It didn't.
And the only time it did happen was Leilua, and he just he didn't pass fast enough. He could have just catched and passed, or he just tried to do his usual, take the tackle and then pass over the top of the person tackling him. And that was the try scoring situation, and it just didn't work out.
That was the one.
And that was pretty heartbreaking too.
Catch and pass. Catch and pass.
Yeah, I know. He shouldn't have taken on the play exactly. He had to catch and pass, and they were in.
Yeah. Wrapping a guy's over in the corner, and it's a totally different game.
Well, he could have just jumped up in the air, let them tackle him around the waist, and then just passed it backwards to Rapana. And
so they had so many chances to win coming up to what we're all probably going to talk about at the 72-minute mark, where the scores were locked at 8-all. And the referee initially called for six again off because he thought went off the Roosters and Canberra's regathered and called six again. But then he changed his decision and said no, fifth tackle. And
he said Canberra it a good four or five times.
Well, okay,
I couldn't hear that on the TV. All I could see was him shaking his arm, going five again, and I didn't hear him. Anytime say fifth tackle on the TV.
You're right. Well, I seen him put his hand up, but I didn't hear it. Correct.
I only seen his hand in the air signaling fifth tackle when the tackle actually occurred.
Yeah, I saw him going like this.
Yeah, everybody saw that. Everybody saw the signal.
He did do that. Again. He put his hand up for the fifth tackle after that.
But then he did the movement for six again.
Yeah, you're right. That was the first movement, and that's clearly what Jack Whiten heard because. I mean, look, he had a chance. Well, okay. Well, what do we all think? What do you?
That's why. It's not necessarily hearing it. It's a signal from the referee. So there is.
It's that play instant. The whistle or play the ref's move, whatever the ref does, and you see that you do that. You
well,
don't.
That's right. But
and that's the way also, everyone says every week: play the whistle or play the ref. So if the ref does six again, you're playing six again.
But then the ref's done 5 seconds later, the ref's put his hand up for fifth tackle and he's yelled it four times. Yeah, he's kept his hand up.
You don't look at the ref again after you're trying to score, do you?
And that's right. And that's where all this controversy lies. Correct. But
they say it all season, play the ref's whistle. They say it a year in, year out. And if you see the ref single six again, all you're going to do is try and either score or take the tackle to then put your team in position to score. But you don't look back at the ref. You don't listen to the ref. All you're focusing on is trying to score or get in a position to score.
Once it's signaled, how can it be changed? Cummins is the lead referee. So whether he's right or whether it's the 100% right call because it only came off a radar. No rooster touched it. So it's 100% the right call, and I'm always an advocate for getting the call correct. But when you can't go back to look at it on replay, Cummins is the lead referee. He just needs to go out and not necessarily grow a set, but he just needs to go out and go, no, I've seen it this because he asked Sutton. I don't know. Did he ask or did Sutton suggest to him, no, it was only
he got a sideline call and then he got a call from Sutton by the looks of it. I mean.
But the thing is, he'd already not necessarily jumped the gun, but he had already ordered the six again. So you just go with that. He's the lead referee. He's the closest one to it. Yep. He's the one with the best view. That's what you go with.
And that's what I've been thinking about this for like 24 hours. So that's what I went with initially, but I'm looking at it the other coin. Like, so say they go with six again and let's say Canberra score, right? Then we're going to have the same controversy that it was the wrong call. The referee is going to get, look, the referee is getting castrated any which way, but on the other side of the coin, if like clearly it was the right call. But if they stuck to their guns and it was the wrong call, then all the Roosters fans would be blowing up. So I'm just looking at it.
If they had have scored.
That's right.
The Roosters fans probably would have been blowing up. But unfortunately, that's where the conundrum lies.
And that's right. And then obviously the Roosters have capitalized straight on that. And they did it was a very good 60-minute try.
If the Raiders had known it wasn't five again, they wouldn't have finished that play with that move.
Well, and this is what I, and that's the other thing. So you were saying, like, you're right. You're exactly right. Because they had, one, they had two chances to win, like you said. Why didn't they go for the field goal? Even if they had that, they put the kick up, why didn't they go for the field goal? They were definitely in striking distance. That was my other thought.
I think they were probably going to go for the tackle so they could get the field goal, because he tried to score, and if he didn't score, he's in perfect position for the field goal to happen.
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying said it was fifth tackle. So they
it was fifth tackle.
Yeah. It's come off, and then they've called six again, and then they said no, it's still fifth tackle. But what I'm saying is why, and this is why probably Ricky Stewart probably said not much, because
he doesn't want to get a big fine, most likely.
But they had chances to win. They could have took a field goal then. They had plenty of chances to win, the Raiders. So it's as controversial as it is, and I completely agree. Like, you know, you play with what the first thing you heard, and especially as a player, you know, your blood's rushing in the head. You hear six again, you probably don't hear anything else because you're just going to go to the middle and then set it up. But
somebody had to have heard. Somebody on the Raiders had to have heard the referee say, last tackle. Well, still the last tackle. Still the last tackle. Still the last tackle. He said four or five times.
Just playing down at Kerwin, trying to, when there's like 20 of us there, trying to tell someone how to do something. They can't even hear us and there's no crowd. That's got 80,000 people there screaming.
Shout out to Kerwin.
Shout out to KBA.
Yeah, shout out to KBA, represent. But, you know, people can't even hear us across the court. And this is a place with 80,000 people.
That's a good point.
It's half the game is just visual, watching what's happening with the referees. Correct. You're not able to hear your own team, but you can have one person at dummy half and they've got people on the left screaming for the ball and he completely ignores them and passes to the right. And that's just because he can't hear.
I mean, unfortunately, that's marred the game because it was a very good game.
It was a terrific game.
Just a shit ending. It wasn't a shit ending. It was just a controversial ending.
If we continue on, once they died with the ball on the sixth tackle, four tackles later,
that's cool.
Four tackles later, the Roosters get the break, take advantage of not so much the mishap, but I would have thought that clearly the Raiders were a little bit rattled by that, because I think a lot of them would have still been going, hey, hang on a minute. We should be still down the other end. Why are we defending now?
And the Raiders had it in the first half with the trainer and the Roosters scored straight away. And at the end of the second half with the ref with this call, and both of them, as soon as that happened, they scored. I was watching the TV with the family in Bowen, represent Bowen. And as soon as that happened, I went, the Roosters going to get this ball, run down the other end and score. And that happened instantly. And I was just like, this is the game over. I said, as soon as that happened, I said, Roos is going to get down the other end and score, and it's game over. And that's exactly what happened. And it was a really shit ending to a really good game.
It was a super try.
Yeah, they did really well. Just catch and pass, get the man to focus on you, get to the next one, get him to focus on you, overlap, pass, run down and score. It was a good try, I've got to admit it.
The Gidley flick. It was a top try, and that's, I mean, and then when they interviewed Trent Robinson after the game, first I thought sort of people are sort of having a dig at Trent Robinson, but I thought Thurston sort of worded the question to him a little bit too general. Like Trent Robinson would have known exactly the point that he was talking about, but you know, Thurston sort of didn't have, you know, in the 72nd minute or anything of that. He says, the referee, you know, signaled six again and then didn't, like, you know what I mean? Like, sort of didn't really come to him with some facts. And that might be nitpicking a little bit. And I love JT. But, you know, he's going as a fan. And then Trent Robinson sort of had a bit of a dig back at him and you know, sort of said, if we're talking about that now, you know, we could go into many instances throughout the game and everything. It's just like, look, that's all well and good, but that is an extremely pivotal part of the game when you look at it in hindsight, that they score straight away.
Correct. But Like, I'm just looking at two sides of coin. Yes, it's controversial, but yes, Canberra had so many chances that they could have actually won that game. But no, it's like everything's hindsight. I noticed, like, the one massive stat that stood out of me in that game was the offloads from Canberra was 19-1.
One offload. Yeah, I think that would have been a plan. Like, the two plans that I could see that the Raiders had in that game was, one, we need to get second phase. And the second plan was, and I don't know why, but was to target one side of the field with the high ball. And Brett Morris was unbelievable under the high ball. Yeah. Under pressure, he was unbelievable. And we can obviously go into, you know, who won the Churchill and, you know, all the things that happened after the game. I thought Brett Morris was the Roosters' best.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, he was consistent. And, like, I suppose terrific.
It was a clear plan that they were going down that one side of the field, mm-hmm. you know, whether it be high ball. And Brett Morris didn't bat an eyelid, didn't drop a ball. I think he might have got trapped once in the end goal, and that was it. Like, he never put a foot wrong. He always put his hand up when they were in trouble for those hard hit ups to try and get out of those situations where it's fourth and fifth tackle and you haven't gotten out of your 20-meter line. That's just what he does. You know, he's a professional winger. He's a professional try scorer. But I thought he was the Roosters' best. And, you know, the little story that's sort of buzzing around at the moment was an NRL official had gone up to Jared Warrior Hargreaves and told him that he was getting the Clive Churchill medal.
I don't understand why he would think that, because he was fucking average. He did not really do much the entire game.
No, I didn't hear that. Wow.
No, this is a story that's been buzzing around this afternoon, is that an NRL official had come up to Maria Hargreaves and said to him that he is getting the Clive Churchill, so be prepared. But the only thing was that one of the three judges hadn't put their votes in yet. I can't remember who the third one was, but the two judges that I can think of off the top of my head were Mel Meninga and Darren Lockyer. And obviously Lockie was doing, you know, all the after-game interviews and things like that. So apparently it took a little while for his votes to get in, and they apparently do it via an app, and that didn't come through somehow. So he had to put his votes in manually. And
Jared did have a great game.
The 100% the right person won the Churchill. Yeah, he was the best player on ground. It was just unfortunate that he was on the losing side. And, you know, a little tidbit out there for everybody. The last person to win the Churchill on a losing side was Daly Cherry-Evans. 2013. Yep. That's a little tidbit for you to sort of, you know, and that's not even that long ago. That's 6 years ago.
Yeah. And he did have a good game, Jared Hargreaves.
He had a good game. I didn't think he was the Roosters' best.
I wouldn't even say it was a good game. I say it was nothing special from him. I didn't really see him do a whole lot. He tackled a lot, obviously.
But 185 meters. Really,
I think dominant.
He had 185 meters in 58 minutes.
He gave away two or three really sloppy penalties as well. And that's just his game. That's just what he does. So
he did a lot of a few grub stuff. I noticed that, but he didn't get in trouble for being a grub. He got in trouble for doing stupid shit. But
just his regular stuff. You know, holding down the play, the ball, sort of stuff like that. So, I don't know how that even came about. I thought the Roosters' best on ground was Brett Morris.
There was another Rooster played really well, but I can't remember who it was, but he was just consistently defending and running and hitting up. I think he was one of their centers or second rows.
I thought Boyd Cordner played really well as well.
Well, I thought Daniel Tupou was probably another player that seemed to not only get the meters, but he just, every time he had the ball, you felt like the Roosters were going, they're going to go in or sort of bust through their attack. I thought both wingers, like you said, like Brett Morris, both wingers, and you never see a wingers freaking get the Clark or any man of the match generally, right, but yeah, it's just ridiculous.
That's, be best, that's right, to be to be man of the match. So it's that's I mean I'd hope that that wouldn't have come into consideration, but for Canberra as well too. Like, you know, they're the two players that needed to have the most influence on the game were obviously Whiten had to be, you know, Whiten played really well, but the two players that had to put their stamp on the game, which was Josh Hodgson and
he was
Josh Papali. And they were good without being great.
Yeah. It was, look, I mean, there's probably three or four players that you could pick out that could have won, I guess, or won the Clive Churchill medal. But yeah, I think Jack Whiten was definitely best on ground. I think he definitely deserved it. Win or draw. It doesn't have a draw. Win or lose. So I'd love to see a draw. Remember the old way where, like,
if we teleport back to the 70s, we can have
Manly
a draw.
Cronulla.
Replay next week.
Manly Cronulla, they have a 9-all draw, and then you play next week. Let's come back at it, boys. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. That is genius, because if it's a draw, then guess what? We've got to sell another 82,000 tickets to go in and watch another grand final. Yeah, it's genius.
That would be good. There was another award that was awarded on grand final. I think it was like a Golden Globe, because Luke Keary with his falling over, pretending to get hit in the face, then with a replay show, he didn't even get hit in the face. So that was pretty good acting to get a penalty.
Yeah, Keary had a little bit of a good in the ball that I can't remember who hit him.
But it
bounced up off the ball, and it just grazed him across the face, and it got looked down. Yeah, he fell down as if he was hitting the face with a brick.
And then obviously got a penalty, but oh my god, it was pretty pretty pathetic that he got a penalty for that, and there was quite a few smacks across the face for the Raiders that never got awarded a penalty.
Well, there was one too near the end there as well that Aiden Caesar was trying to sell it.
Yeah, but his wasn't that bad.
And he was trying to sort of milk it, and it didn't happen as well. So that was near the end. So I guess they were sort of possibly getting a little bit desperate to try and milk the penalty. So the other thing that I sort of felt a little that was a little bit interesting as well about what Ricky Stewart did was pull Charles Nicol Klokstad.
Yeah, well, in what aspect first?
Well, most of the times he's generally the most likely he's going to be able to break the line.
Yeah.
And I thought he was another one that was terrific. And they yanked him with 10 minutes to go. And he was, there was a couple of bits there too, I think inside the last, you know, within the last 15 minutes where he was having major cramp problems. And yeah. I remember, and not even that long ago, I don't want to sort of be, you know, get off my lawn sort of old man talking, you know, just play around cramp. But that's what they used to do. If you had a cramp, the referees would go, okay, and they would move you 10 meters away from the person that was having the cramp. Somebody else would get the ball and you would play on. It's just a cramp.
Yeah.
And they stopped the whole, game. They put a stop to the whole game because Nicol Klokstad was having a cramp, and you could see it on the telly as well. You could see it on the TV that his calf muscle was all knotted up, back up inside his leg. It looked pretty ordinary, but it's just like, okay, let's just give the ball over to somebody. Let's move it 10 meters away from it, and let's just keep the ball rolling. Like, why do we have to stop the game completely for cramp?
I mean, unless they're worried about, like, I mean, the way these player managers are, and for each player, unless they're worried about being sued or whatever, I don't know. I agree.
But it happens. I thought that was pretty ordinary that they completely stopped the whole game for Nicol Klokstad to have his cramp stretched out.
Yeah.
Yeah, once again, don't want to be salty, but it happened.
You certainly sound salty.
No, but well, look at what happened earlier in the year up here in Townsville when Nene McDonald had his ankle snapped sideways. Yeah, exactly. Nobody knows where he is right now.
That's when everything changed. They started changing everything.
There's a warrant out for his arrest. But you know what I mean? Like that was completely disregarded. His ankle, was sideways. John Asiata is lying next to him with an elbow injury. The trainer is waving at the touch judge, saying, "Hey, we've got injuries down here, and they're pretty catastrophic." And it just got blown off. It was against Melbourne. And it just got blown off, and they're just like, no, just keep playing. There's two Cowboys players down in backfield. Keep going. And then Melbourne ends up getting a penalty, which they didn't deserve because they should have stopped the game for these two players being down. And then Melbourne ended up winning the game. The Cowboys had Melbourne on the ropes, and I know you're not going to like that very much, but if you go back to that game, the Cowboys had Melbourne on the ropes. And if they stop the game there and then that penalty doesn't happen by, I'm pretty sure it was by Jake Granville. That doesn't happen. They don't kick the goal to go 2 points ahead. And then they don't score again after that because it changes the game. Because you stop the game for a pretty catastrophic injury, not for a stupid cramp.
Yeah, but that injury and that game resulted in the refs getting in trouble a fair bit, and they've changed the entire way they do it the rest of the season, and they've been stopping the game regularly for all sorts of random
rubbish,
vague injuries. It's like, oh, he's got a sore testicle.
My little finger's sore. Oh, I better stop the game.
But the thing is, they just like the NRL is bringing because people get upset about grey. They just bring in black and white rules, and that's one of the black and white rules they brought in now. Like it or don't like it, it's just the way it is. They said, this is the rule. This is what happens. This is what's going to happen. And it's one of those things. What do you do? And they've just said, this is what we're going to do. And they've been doing it all since that game, really. That was the turning point. Because they went, yeah, we really stuffed up that. And,
yes, they did.
They've changed it now. But cramps seem to be a bit far. But, that's just what they do now.
You don't stop the game for a cramp.
Clearly, you've never had a cramp. No.
You don't stop the freaking game for somebody who's having cramp. You take the ball from them, you move away, and you play on.
Yeah. Well, after I guess with that game being 14-8, Roosters went back to back. First time for how long that's been? It's been a while.
20 years.
Yeah,
I just keep talking about that over and over again. But the thing is, you don't really want back to backs in a comp like this. You want people. The top team to continually change every year.
Exactly.
Back to back is a bad sign, in my opinion, because it means one team's becoming too dominant.
Yeah, correct. But it's also hard to do as well. So, full
There's
credit.
Been a lot of teams that have nearly done it.
Out of any of the teams that you would have thought would have been able to do it, you think Melbourne would have been able to jag one back to back?
Yeah,
well, that's true. In light of all that, after the grand final, I guess if we move on quickly to some news, will Cameron Smith retire?
I guess it comes down to, does he enjoy playing still? I reckon if he still enjoys playing, he should go around again. Dislike the Melbourne Storm. They've got such a good culture and they've got such good players.
Don't be biased here. We're not biased.
Literally, I think they're probably the team of the. They're probably the team of the.
I hate the Cowboys.
We hate your face too. But we can't do much about that.
We still got to look at that.
As much as Melbourne Storm are probably my least favorite team in the comp now, it's only because they're so good. I think. But they have literally the best culture. And they get so much out of their players. Everyone, if you go to a bar, some people will just squeeze lemon, throw it in the bin. Craig Bellamy squeezed that lemon till literally it's giving you its firstborn child. It's an impressive, amazing thing that they keep doing every year.
I guess my only, caveat with it, I would not want Cameron Smith to leave, obviously, but as a Melbourne Storm supporter, Brandon Smith is coming through leaps and bounds and will be there next time.
They have to try and find a spot for him in that starting side.
Or the Cowboys can take him. Cowboys are happy to take him.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
We'll take him.
You can send him up here. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, the Broncos are looking for someone too. So,
we'll keep him. Well, you can. We'll keep him and Cameron can retire. That's what I'm sort of getting at. Like, does Cameron know it's sort of time?
They're going to be looking for a lot of players.
Yeah, Brisbane have got out the building. Yeah.
Well, that's a massive. I think a season review on the Broncos will probably take 20 minutes. But
that'll be at least 20 minutes.
Did you just want to touch on the Kangaroo squads before we finish up?
Yeah, we could get into the Roos squad. I didn't think the only sort of weird one that I sort of thought about the Kangaroo squad, who not so much didn't deserve to, but I thought was a bit of a strange pick, was Paul Vaughan.
Yeah.
It's the only one.
He's a good player in a shit team.
It's the only one I have a problem with. I just thought that was a bit of a strange selection.
I guess when I went through the side, you're right. I mean, I can't see him being on the run on, but he is a decent, because he can play anywhere in that, front row, I should say, anywhere in that scrum. So you're right. It's probably not too, it's pretty much 1-17 or 1-21. I think they end up picking that you'd sort of go, yeah, there's really no one except for probably Paul Vaughan that didn't deserve to be there. I did find it interesting that they also named the World Cup 9s squad.
I don't think anybody's watching that, but anyway.
Well, I guess I just find it interesting because most of us know that Meninga is a consultant up at Canberra. And look, a lot of it's picked for the future. Like there's Pappenhausen and there's Kalen Ponga. Like a lot of these are big, like players that'll relish World Cup 9s. But
it'll be exciting and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, they did the 9s thing with clubs and everything like that, and everybody got over it pretty quickly because it got stale. Because I think they left it in Auckland a little bit too long. I thought they should have tried to spread the wealth around a little bit and maybe have it at Suncorp and then next year have it in Sydney and then even next year take it to Melbourne and spread the wealth. But to sign a 3-year contract there, you could see that it was dead after the third year.
But also the clubs and coaches didn't seem to enjoy it, I don't think. I think they got shit out because they got injuries in it.
I like the World Cup way. Yeah, you're right. I would say having like you see your country sort of play instead of like you know you instead like your team it's your club play correct most of it was fine. I just found like it was very Gold Coast, like AJ Brimson and Jai Arrow made it, so I don't know if that's Meninga sort of
why is Jai Arrow not in the test squad?
Jai Arrow probably deserves to be in the test squad, but that's probably down to the way Gold Coast were this year.
No, that's right, and that's probably. But that's like you said before. You know, Meninga is a consultant up there on the Gold Coast down there on the Gold Coast. Jai Arrow's not going to let you down.
No. I just thought AJ Brimson was a
That you can bring off the bench, and he can play in the middle, and he can play out on an edge a little bit. So. I thought that was the one that looked to me. But yeah, like you said, that 9 squad will be booming with youth. So I think if they're gonna do that, then that's probably how they should do the 9s then, and make it like they do with the Olympics and soccer and have it say that you're only gonna have like say you're under 23s there and that's it, sort of make it so you've got your up and comers that come out there and they might actually relish and enjoy it.
Yeah. It just,
you don't see any of the Australian and in the rugby union sevens, you don't see any of the full form games playing the sevens games or only occasionally.
True.
It's often a good point. developed sort of thing. Or people that only ever play the sevens.
Yeah. For me, I always go back to the first year that they did the 9s and why I think a lot of coaches and players don't really like it that much. Was the Lachlan Coote injury. He hadn't played 1 minute of NRL for the North Queensland Cowboys. He was a fairly marquee sort of signing, and even the Cowboys wanted that. It was a 2014. And it was the very first game of the 9s. Boom, ACL, done for the season. I think that made a lot of coaches a bit apprehensive and a little anxious to go, oh, okay. Is it? We all know that it's football and you're going to get hurt. And there's always the possibility that you're going to get hurt. So, and I think just, you know, with it being sort of a high profile-ish type of player and, you know, on a marquee signing for a new club and that happening in the very first game, I'm pretty sure it was the first game, but I think that sort of made people a little apprehensive. And that sort of, you know, that was for me, that was the demise of it straight away. And it was its first, you know, incarnation of it. But they let it stagnate in Auckland too long.
Yeah, true. I mean, it will be, look, it's coming up the next 2 or 3 weeks. So we'll be probably 2 weeks, sorry. So it will be exciting to watch, but you're right. I mean, as long as players don't severely get injured, then it's probably into the timing of it too. I didn't like the preseason, like the February sort of timing of the Nines in Auckland. I do prefer where it's straight after the season. So
yeah,
like
that. I don't know. There's no real ideal time for it.
Probably, but then you said, you know, what if you sign this marquee player and for the new year they're all ready to go and they get injured in the first bit? Whereas you've got the players that you've got that squad already, I mean, until next year, obviously.
Devil's advocate, what if they're a player coming off contract?
Well, this is true. Like, then that's, and that's probably why this timing isn't too bad. Yeah.
What if it's Lachlan Coote? And he hasn't quite signed for the Cowboys yet. He goes and play, you know, this is a hypothetical, but he goes and plays for, you know, for Australia in the Nines, and then he gets hurt. And then it's like,
just before that November 1 deadline.
Yeah, who's going to want to sign somebody who's coming off an ACL?
True. But yeah, there's probably no real good timing of it, is there?
No, unfortunately, there's not. That's, I'd almost prefer it to be in the preseason, and you know, and you could do away with those traditional preseason games, because at least you're getting football. But there is still a need for preseason games. But you know, in that regard, there's never an ideal time of the year to do it, and unless you can come up with a solution yourself. And you know what the hell do you do? You know, if you can't come up with a decent solution, then you know it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, and just finishing on it, I do like that it's at Bankwest Stadium. I think that's the perfect stadium to have a Nines.
It's perfectly placed.
Perfectly placed. It's in Sydney. It's in like a multicultural area, and it's just a stadium. Like, it doesn't matter where you are. It's a good stadium. Yeah. Well, that'll do it for the grand final special. I guess don't forget to follow us on our socials, which I'm very certain, despite what Jeffrey Pringle says, I'm very certain we're up to like 96 likes on the Facebook. Also SoundCloud and also Twitter at the Final Play Pod.
What about iTunes? I'm still waiting on iTunes.
Well, you know, I'm not a Mac genius, so I've got to, you know, give me a chance to get there. Yeah, well, give me a chance to get there. And look, if people want an iTunes or a Spotify, then hit us up, because we don't know what you want. But if you throw some messages on Facebook, we'd love to hear from anybody, good or bad. I don't really care.
From anybody, you're getting desperate. Just talk to us.
Even if it's a sponsor, you know, throw that in the mix too.
we'll start going around to some local businesses. Hey, you work for a nationwide giant?
Yeah. Well, you know, if the Benjamins roll in, because we also
sorry, mate, that's the wrong country. We don't have Benjamins in Australia.
Yeah, we do.
We also because we also need some music, but we're really struggling with that at the moment to get over the copyrights.
We want Benjis
to get over some copyrights for some music at the start.
No, that's right. Exactly. Yeah, we do need some Benjis so we can get around copywriting. So let's start a GoFundMe page.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get us anywhere. Do you have any final words, Pringle? I reckon we'll get you on next week for the review anyway, if you can.
All I can say is it was a really awesome grand final, but the ending
just left a bad taste in the mouth, but you'd be used to that.
Mouthwash.
Yeah. Well, I'm married, so I'm not used to anything, but anyway.
just as a final, just a quick shout out to the Newtown Jets who won the Interstate.
Yeah.
The Interstate Cup and the Brisbane Broncos for winning the NRLW.
And that Newtown Jets game, if anyone watched it, was
oh my lord.
Man, that was a tale of two halves, but that last 20 minutes was
Nobody wanted to win that game. Burley were clearly the better side in the first half, and nobody wanted to win it in the second half. And you just, how do you have a grand final come down to a final play where it's a, funnily enough, the name of our podcast, but the final play of the game and just a little dink over the top, and it's just the way the football bounces like that. It was just an unbelievable end.
It was actually, it was probably more exciting than the actual grand final. As exciting as the grand final was, it was an insane game. Like, because
a couple of thousand people that were there, except for Burley fans, like at the end, I think would have thoroughly enjoyed that game.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, full credit to Burley just finishing on them, because they have one or two players that are only contracted to NRL squads. The rest are part timers. So.
That's right. And Newtown's littered with Cronulla Sharks.
Well, they're all signed to Cronulla Sharks, so yeah, they Burley did really well. They unfortunately they threw the game away, but I like the concept. I don't know what you think.
A fantastic concept. I think it's terrific.
It's just a shame more people can't get there, but I guess sort of early to watch the game, but yeah, I think it's a fantastic concept.
It's one of the better things that the NRL has come up with, with in conjunction with the New South Wales and Queensland Rugby League Board for them to be able to put that, instead of just having, say, the New South Wales Cup grand final on that day, to turn it into that interstate. Yeah. I think it's been done now for about five years now, I think.
Close to five, I think, yeah.
Yeah. 5 or 6 years. So I think it's super concept, and yeah, sort of gives that little bit of extra spice, for the end of the year and for those guys that might be fringe first grade players and things like that, to even, because they wouldn't, a lot of them wouldn't play at ANZ even though there's nobody there. There's only a couple thousand people there, but to play in a stadium like that is excellent for them.
And just on the ANZ, we'll talk about the review next year, but we'll see if the games are actually going to be there in the next couple of years for the grand final. A lot we can talk about.
Next year's grand final is going to be at the SCG, but nobody knows where the year after is going to be. So
that's not even confirmed, the SCG. So I guess, that's 100% not confirmed yet. Everything I've read is definitely not confirmed.
Where was the last grand finals? Talk about home crowd advantage.
Well, no, that's true, but I don't know. I think the NRL, we're sort of maybe going a little bit over time here. Yeah. But I think the NRL could definitely, they're using State of Origin as a cash cow right now. So I don't understand why they can't use this as a little bit of a cash cow, and just put it out there to not so much the highest bidder, but. Try and make a little bit of money off it.
Because they're clearly not, that's probably not a bad idea. They're not getting the viewership. So, you've got to try something new. They're also, there wasn't a full crowd. Like, it says it was a sellout, but there wasn't a full crowd. So maybe if a highest bidder sort of went to it, then they might, let's say Melbourne get it. Let's just throw that out there and say Melbourne get it. And then because the government gets behind it, they get the hype to people, and the people might actually want to go. So that's probably not a bad idea if they're gonna go on the hype of the origin.
No, that's right, and that's what they've got to try and do. The State of Origin has turned into the NRL and rugby league's 100% cash cow. They try and milk that for everything that it's worth, including ticket prices and stuff like that. Like, just going off the last couple of years, they're pricing so many people out of going and getting that State of Origin experience, because the tickets are just, they're too much now. That's Suncorp, they're like $180 for nosebleed seats.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Yep.
And they wonder why they haven't sold it out for the last 2 years.
Yep, correct. Well, I guess we won't talk about that next week, but we'll have a season review next week and most likely have a week 5 of the NFL review.
Correct. This week. Week 5 NFL.
Which Pringle's going to be probably in a draft, but that's a whole different conversation. We'll talk about later.
And also too, you know, the closer we get to the end of October, that means NBA season's coming around, baby. Woo-hoo!
And there's heaps of talk about a la the jersey I'm wearing right now. So
nobody can see that, right?
Yeah, so. Everybody will know what I'm wearing. So
bandwagon.
Fuck off. All right. Well, that's a good week, everyone. I've had enough of these two guys. So see you all later.
We've had enough of your purple and gold.
Thanks, Jess. It was good to talk.
See ya.